July 14, 1989, Charles Altman is being interviewed by Marion Zadie for the Northville Historical Society's Oral History Department. Charles, it's my pleasure to have you here in Northville and doing this interview with you. And tell us a little bit about your life in Northville.
Well, my family came to Northville in 1914. How my dad ever found the little town of Northville from the city of Detroit, I will never figure out. 30 miles of the roughest road that you ever saw in your life. The pavement ended at Northwestern High School in the city of Detroit. And from there on, it was a gravel road all the way to Northville. And he found 6.5 acres at the edge of town and with a house and with outside plumbing and a pump. And that's what he bought. And, of course, he modernized the house. And
where was that located, Charles?
That was down on Plymouth Avenue, right on the edge of town.
Which is now South Main.
Which is now South Main Street. And we had the benefit, my sister and I, being brought up on 6.5 acres, which was farm-like, as opposed to in the city. And of course, all the kids thought it was great. We had places to play. We had a big apple orchard. We had grapevines out there. And an old farm building, an old barn. I can remember the old barn. And of course, my dad, being a city man, had to try, you know, we had chickens, we had a goat, nothing worked out, you know. We had, my dad was a hunter, and we had raised beagle dogs, and it was kind of nice being able to live the farm life, so to speak, and yet being downtown. Of course, we were a long way from school. And you're a mile from school.
Yes, you would have bus service today.
Bus service today, and you know, I hear these people have walked 8 and 10 miles to go to school. We didn't walk that far. And most times, my dad would drive us to school, and my mother would pick us up. But we did walk it in nice weather. And
you had a sister?
I had a sister. 4 years older than I, and I was born in 22, and of course went to kindergarten in a house up on Main Street, because that's the way it was. The kindergarten was in, the Board of Education was upstairs, and I think the kindergarten was downstairs, and my kindergarten teacher was Miss Cavell.
Oh, yes.
Which ended up Miss Zeeton, who was a state senator, I believe.
Correct.
State representative, state senator, I think. And she was my kindergarten teacher, and of course the Cavells were old family. The father, of course, was a veterinary up on Grizzle Street, and the son was a veterinary, and I think is today at East Owas.
I think so.
Ted Cavell. And our school life was just like every other kid's, always problems. Always problems with the teacher. And mother would take me by the hand when the notes would come home, you know, and Charles will try to do better. And I usually did. I tried to do better. But at one time, you talked about the band in Northville.
Yes.
Both my sister and I played in the band. My dad, before he got the job as advertising manager for Eddie Stairs Theaters in the city of Detroit, was always in show business of some kind. When he was a kid, believe it or not, he toured with Buffalo Bill's show.
Fantastic.
And, you know, people think of Buffalo Bill in back in the Indian days. Well, Buffalo Bill had a show in the 1900s. And my dad toured with him until the time that Buffalo Bill took his show to Europe. And my dad didn't want to leave the country and left Buffalo Bill's show and joined Barlum and Bailey's show and was an acrobat.
An acrobat.
Yep. And he ended his career by a fall. He used to do a running somersault over seven chairs. That was his big thing. We had show bills home showing this, and one time he hit the last chair and broke his kneecap, and that was the end. And my dad limped. Not so people would notice it, but he always did have trouble with that knee. And so then, because he couldn't do that, he took the easiest job at the circus, which was playing drums in the band, in the circus band. And he played drums in the circus band. Somehow or other, I guess he got to Detroit, and he got a job with Eddie Stair, who owned four theaters in the city of Detroit. And back in those days, this was the old Garrett Theater, the old Schubert Detroit, Schubert Lafayette, and the old Cass Theater. None of them are there today. But my sister has an autograph book of all the famous people. I would hope that she still has this book. Marie Dressler, Eddie Cantor, Al Jolson, all these people who ever came to any of the theaters that Stair owned, my dad would have an autograph book, and he would do. Eddie Guest wrote a poem about my sister playing drums in the local band.
Can you recite it?
No. But it's published somewhere. My dad, coming to Northville and being in show business, then got involved with the community band. And they had the gazebo up right on Main Street.
The Crow's Nest.
And back in those days, I think we have a picture. I think we donated it to the society. When they took up some old pictures, the Norfolk Record one time, and we went through and we gave the Norfolk Record some old pictures that we had, that we could identify with. I don't know what happened to them. I don't know if this...
They may be at the historic village.
And I could pick out my dad, and that was the only person I knew in this band. And there were about six members in this band. And then they decided they were going to expand this band, and about this time they started the Northville Fair. The local business people got together. My dad was one of the original guys in this thing. They sold stock. If my memory serves me, they sold 300 shares of stock. I think there were 300. I think the stock was $20 a share, or $10 a share, whatever the original stock. We had two shares. I don't think anybody had, to start with, too many. Lou Stewart, Lapham, Bill Forney, who was in the coal business and ice business in town, all the business people in town. They all chipped in a few bucks, and they bought that property, and they started the Northville Fair, and they called it the Northville Wayne County Fair, of course. And non-profit thing, any money they made, they put back in. But they needed a band. And at that time, the high school didn't have a band. And the first band that was formed, I can remember, was called the Northville Community School Band. And it had community members, older people, along with the school people. And they'd play at the fair, and they played concerts on the corner. And my sister played the drums in the band when she got to be old enough. I played the alto, which today is a French horn. And back in those days, they called them old altos. And we would have a Saturday night concert and then go to Horton's Drugstore, I believe, on the corner. Was it Horton's?
Horton's,
you're helping me. And we'd all get a little ticket, and we could go to Horton's Drugstore and get a sundae or a soda for playing in the band. And, of course, the guy at the Vanilla Factory.
Langfield
then got involved with the band, and started, money started to come in. And they brought in an instructor by the name of Edward Head. Mr. Head came from Redford. I believe he was a teacher in Redford, band director. And he came out and did Northville. And he had four kids. He had Gladney Head, Sammy, and two daughters, Joyce and Peggy Head, the four kids, and they joined the Northville band, and they were almost professionals, their father being a teacher and so forth. And when Langfield would donate money, and I don't know exactly, I don't remember, uniforms, I would imagine, and things like this, and would pay for trips, we'd go on trips and play places, and Langfield was a big benefactor to that band. About that time when Head came and all that, then my dad dropped out of the community, and most of it, and went right to, it was a high school band then. So.
How old were you when you first played in this band?
When I was in seventh grade.
Seventh grade.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I believe my sister too was in the seventh grade. My dad, being in show business in Detroit, knew so many people that my sister took piano lessons at the old Detroit Conservatory of Music. Of course, all my mother's relatives were in Detroit, and we would go down on Saturday and visit a relative, end up at the Conservatory of Music for a piano lesson for my sister, and then from there we would take streetcars or buses down to the Cass Theater where my dad was working, and then he would bring us home. Take us down in the morning and drop us off at a streetcar stop, and we'd go to my grandmother's or whatever. Well,
what was your mother's maiden name?
Marshall.
Marshall.
Now, after the piano lessons, my sister decided she wanted to be a drummer and play the. She could play the xylophone because of the fact that she had piano lessons, so she knew the keys. But she really wanted to be a drummer. So, my dad knew a lot of people, and by gosh, if he didn't get the drummer from the Detroit Symphony Orchestra to give my sister drumming lessons, and that man's name was Cooper, and she would go down and take drum lessons from Cooper. And as a matter of fact, she won a scholarship to Interlaken in drums, in the percussion thing. And, of course, I used to sit there. I couldn't read music very well. I used to pretend I'd toot, and I'd make my fingers go. Playing an alto, you know, you didn't have to do too many solos. So it wasn't too bad.
Did you pass that on to your children? Did they have that interest in music that you grew up with?
My daughter plays the... Can we ask my wife sitting over here?
We can.
Oh, she plays the auto harp and the dulcimer. She messes around with the dulcimer.
That's fantastic.
And this is a thing that she plays with, and then she takes time out to have one of my grandchildren, and that gets put on the side. And then it comes out again, and then what happens is that, I don't know, like out in our area, the churches, she goes to the Methodist Church in Oak Grove, and we go to Heartland. But basically, it's the same that the choirs don't sing in the summertime. So what most churches do is they have people. You be the musical entertainment for this Sunday. So the auto harp gets brought out, and she feverishly practices for 2 weeks and does a piece at her church, and then... with her two kids, she doesn't have too much time with them.
Just wanted to hopefully know that this is going to the Altman.
The musical
talent will go on.
Yeah, well, yeah. I can remember the teaching me F-A-C-E, face, and all cows eat green grass or something on the
scale. Or every good boy does.
Well, that's the musical scale. That's how you read notes. And believe me, when I tell you, I can't... I know that the blank spaces are F-A-C-E space, I think. But, you know, ABC, I don't... I can't play. I can't read a note, really. And, of course, came 39, and we all graduated. And that... and we just had our 50th anniversary, 50th reunion here. And that was really, really a fun thing.
Good to see those old faces.
It sure is. As far as school days are concerned, I probably got thrown out as much as anybody in the class. I was with a bunch of rabble-rousers, Jack McCrum.
Oh, and, Jack.
Oh, dear Jack. And Odell Bray and E.K. Starkweather and Kenny Martins. I think Kenny Martins is probably the worst kid in the school. It was we had G.B. Harrison. We had Paul Thompson was our first principal, I remember. I think probably he was the first one that that gave Kenny Martins and I a couple of days off. Kenny Martins and I were used to pal around together pretty good. And I think Paul Thompson gave us the first time. And then the other principal was Harrison, G.B. Harrison. And I can remember him telling me, you know, you're never going to amount to anything.
Wrong he was.
Oh, not really. I think he was pretty right. But as he sent me packing, I think what happened, we had a skip day. They always had a senior skip day. And if I remember right, I think there was Janet Stewart, E.K. Starkweather, Kenny Martins, myself, maybe Lucille Lapham. Anyway, there were six of us, three boys and three girls, and we made skip day a two-day affair, and that didn't go over too good with Mr. Harrison. And so we got put out of school, and we were told to bring our parents. Well, I bummed around for a week before my folks found out about it. That didn't go over too good. But we eventually got in, and we eventually graduated, and went to Washington on our senior trip, which was a fantastic thing for a bunch of farm kids out north.
Really, truly, a great trip.
It really was. And Ed Malama, of course, and Miss Gilner was our sponsors, and great people, and we had a great time.
And Miss Gilner was at your class reunion.
Sure was. I'll tell you what, I walked up, I saw a lot of people walk up and say, I'm so-and-so, do you remember me? Well, certainly I remember you. And then she would bring an antidote back. And I, you know, I'm thinking, you know, she, Miss Gilner taught business pretty much. And the only thing I remember about her is her telling me that I'd better leave the typing class because I'm never going to make it. This is after about 3 weeks in. And so I didn't take typing because... on the recommendation of Miss Gilner, she said, my fingers were too short or something, but I never did learn how to type. But I kept thinking, when I walked up to her and said, I'm Chuck Altman, and she said, oh, I remember you. And I'm thinking, you know, well, is she just saying this? And 2 minutes later, Dale Bray walks up to her and says hello, and she says, hello, Dale. And she's telling him of things that happened back in 1937 and 38. So... the woman has a fantastic memory. I just...
great.
Just...
she loved her job. She's a good teacher.
She had to mm-hmm. teach as long as she did. Mm-hmm. So...
Charles, now, you were You're old enough that you probably remember a little bit about the Great Depression.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I guess we were one of the fortunate few that my dad really never lost his job with the Eddie Stair group of theaters, except that there was not much work. The legitimate theater, the four theaters that Eddie Stair owned were not movie houses. These were legitimate theaters. And of course, nobody had any money to go to the theaters, and so business was bad there. When a theater went down, they called it the theater was dark. And I'll tell you what, there were times when all four theaters were dark, and sometimes only one theater was operating, and they would bring people in. I remember them bringing in Thurston. I remember them bringing in Blackstone. Of course, with my dad having the influence that he had, I would get a front row seat.
Oh.
Thurston would say, "I need a little boy," and everybody in the audience would haul up their hand, and he'd say, "I'll take him right there." And either my sister or I usually got on the stage, and something drastic would happen, but it was always a bunch of fun. But back about, I would say, in 33 or 34, the WPA was established.
Correct.
And to keep these actors busy, they started a thing called Opera Under the Stars. And Opera Under the Stars was in Brick Stadium. And because of the fact that my dad was an advertising man, my dad got the job of doing the advertising for Opera Under the Stars, which meant we had to go down to Brick Stadium. I can remember as the walkways that the people went to the ball game, they had cards advertising this. And my dad used to go down and change those cards every 2 weeks as the dates would change. And of course, then we'd go to the ball game. And, I can remember
who played
meeting. Yeah, I can remember meeting these people. Dad would get me down in the dugout, and I would shake. This was a big deal. I was a little kid then, and I can remember it happening. But and I'm sure I was introduced to all these ball players, and I do not. I remember being there, but I don't remember the players.
Too young.
But I remember going down there and going to the ball games, and my dad got me a baseball that I have to this day that was signed by all the New York Yankees, Babe Ruth, Lefty Gomez, and I do have that baseball yet today.
You probably want to leave it to the Historical Society.
Well, anyway, the Depression was worse. It seemed like our family was getting along, but I, being as small as I was, they didn't discuss the financial part of the family with me, but I assume that my dad had a cut in wages. The work wasn't there while he went in and was still working. I assume that everybody else had tightened the belt. So my dad had a good friend in the Liquor Control Commission, and his name was Bill Henderson. And Bill Henderson's relatives today run Henderson Glass Company. And their Henderson Glass is a big company all the way around.
Yes.
And Bill Henderson was one of the original Liquor Control Commissioners. And he says to my dad, why don't you put a liquor store in Northville? Put a liquor store in Northville. Well, my goodness.
And do away with our blind pigs?
Yeah. Here we were, a family of non-drinkers. None of our family ever drank. I guess that's one of the only bad habits I didn't have here in Northville. But anyway, my dad said, I don't think that, in a town like Northville, And so, and Bill said, "Hey, you can make yourself a few dollars." So my dad opened up a store called Center Street Grocery.
And that was located?
It was located on North Center Street.
Now between Main and?
Between Main and?
And?
Dunlap.
On the east side of the street?
On the east side of the street. Now, that store, before we moved, went into three, it was in three different locations up there. Now, for why we moved, I have no idea. At one time, we were right on the corner for a very small time, and Sam Pickard ended up with his meat market there, but we were there for a short time. And then we moved down into the Ely building, where Ely's was on one side and we were on the other. And they opened up a music store. Cameron Lodge opened up a music store. We were in that Ely building. Ely had the ice in the back, and we were in the front. And I don't know if we were expanding or going backwards. In that same building, that Ely building, there were three stores. At one time, there were three stores. Lodge Music, RF Center Street Grocery, and then Dutch Sonnenberg had his newspaper stand back in that little tiny thing.
Right.
And I can remember at some point in time, Dutch moved up next to Kenny Rathburn's place on Main Street, West Main Street. And I can remember that our liquor store being in that little building. I can't put it all together, but I know we were in three locations up there. And as the business expanded,
it was successful in Northville then, a liquor store.
It was quite successful. My dad always said, you know, we have to be on you got to be on the side streets. You can't go on Main Street because these people can't have their ministers watching them go into the liquor store. But that, of course, is a whole different story. But we needed an expansion place, and my dad was smart enough to know you not to go on Main Street back in those days. So we went down the hill, down back at Gunsell's Drugstore was a vacant lot. And we bought that vacant lot and built the store there. And it was still called Center Street Grocery. And my dad was still affiliated with the theaters when this store was built. And it was a growing business, and successful and profitable. And about this time, when my dad got sick, my dad had asthma bad all his life and got to be bedridden, and we had to hire people to run the store. One of the people who worked for us was Harvey Ritchie, who worked for us for my dad for years. He worked at the store. My mother would keep the books, do the banking, and my dad got bedridden. At that point in time, he was no longer affiliated with the theaters in Detroit, and the only source of income of the family was that particular store. And
now, Charles, was this in the days of script back then, or had we passed that?
Well, we're past script now. Script was at the early part of the Depression, but as I explained to you, to the best of my recollection, and I may be entirely wrong, I think only municipal employees got script. Government employees, either federal government, city, county, state employees. I think, well, not the federal employees, because the script was issued by the state of Michigan.
Right. So then in 1934, this probably didn't exist when the business opened.
I don't think script was around that long.
No.
I think this depression hit. Everybody lost their money in the banks, and everybody panicked. But I think, and of course I was really small when this happened, I don't think like in 1929 when the crash came, I think everybody had a bad year.
Yes.
And from then on, I don't think it continued to go down. I think it continued to go up. Mm-hmm. I started up slowly. Everybody was eating oatmeal three times. Nobody had any money.
Right.
They were losing their homes. my wife's father in Plymouth was a plumbing contractor and in a building business, and was in the process of building homes and mortgaging them and building them and renting them and so forth and so on. Well, when the Depression hit, nobody could pay the rent. Nobody could pay the rent. He couldn't pay the mortgage payments. He lost everything. And my father-in-law was only one of a this is what was happening to people. But I think that the whole thing was actually going uphill. By 33, I think they were turning it around. It wasn't quite as bad. People didn't have money yet, but I think the governments were on a better footing, and I don't think they were using script. I don't know how long they used script.
It seemed like a short period of time, but I could. My father was paid half in script and half. He was a county worker. And there were stores, grocery stores in town that accepted that.
And some wouldn't.
That's right. No chain store, you know. But the Hills Brothers Meat Market, the E&B grocery store.
E&B, Bogart's.
Yes. And those stores accepted the script for food.
So, back to the party store, my dad kept getting sick. I was a toolmaker at Ford's. I'd served my apprenticeship at Ford's and was a toolmaker at Ford's. I'd worked there about 9 years. And help was hard to get in the store, and my mother was just getting progressively frustrated. My dad couldn't do anything, was bedridden. At that point in time, we had to go and haul our own liquor from the city of Detroit to Northville. And the Liquor Control Commission rules were so unreal. Only a couple of people whose name was on that license could sign for that liquor in Detroit to bring it out. And the Miller boys that lived out on Taft and Nine Mile had a truck, and
Art.
Art and Vic. And they hauled liquor to the party store for years and years and years and years. And so it was just getting increasingly tougher for my mother to run that thing. And I went up there one time, and she was just terribly frustrated. And I says, "Well, Mother," I says, "I tell you what, I'm going to quit my job and I'll start this store. I'll come to work in the store and take some of this off your hands," which I did. And so I worked there on Center Street for about 3 years. The business kept getting bigger and bigger. Parking kept getting tougher and tougher. We had like two parking spots on Center Street at the bottom of that hill, and half the guys would come in and park their car, and then their cars would end up at the fairgrounds if they wouldn't put the brakes on. The town council constantly discussed no parking at all on Center Street. And if they took my two parking spots there on Center Street, I was out of business. And so I discussed this with my folks, and I said, "I think we better build a new store." In the meantime, I had gone to New York and saw a party store. What a real party store was like. Most of the places that you bought liquor back in those days were either drugstores or grocery stores. Now, the state made all the money on the liquor. The person that sold the liquor to the public made 10%.
Cool.
It was a sideline. It was like the lottery is today. They put these lottery machines in there. You can't make a living selling lottery tickets, nor back in those days could you presumably make a living selling liquor only. You had to have, it was a sideline. That's why we call the store Center Street Grocery.
Oh.
Because you had to have a grocery store first. I can remember dusting that canned goods that we had on the shelf year after year after year after year, and somebody wanted to buy it, we'd beg them not to buy it, because we'd have to go to the grocery store to Kroger's or A&P and buy another can of coffee and put it on the shelf. To keep up, we had to have, back in those days, I can't remember, they had like $1,500 worth of groceries you had to have in stock. But I went to New York, and I saw a liquor store that was fabulous, and it had fancy food. And things that really went, today is normal in a party store. So we came, and I came back, and I told my folks, I think this is the way we ought to go. And we built the Good Time Party Store down on 7 Mile Road back in 1949.
7 Mile at the South Main.
Yeah, that was our property. Mm-hmm. You talk about, sometime if you want to talk about that property, I can tell you how that property developed, how the 7 Mile Road cut went through there, too.
Yes, that must have been through your property.
Yeah, that should be discussed at another time.
All right.
We're discussing the Good Time Party Store.
Okay.
So, I built the Good Time Party Store. I went to New York to the Fancy Food Show, which had that day, and today is one of the largest trade shows in the world, the Fancy Food Show in the city of New York. And I brought back stuff that I'd never heard of, and a lot of people had never heard of. And we opened up a pretty fancy store. It was the talk of the state of Michigan. We were written up in several newspapers, and it was a success right off the bat.
It was the most beautiful store in Northville, I can tell you.
People appreciated the party goods that they could buy there. We had stuff that was imported from all over the world, and we were, other than the store in Bloomfield Hills, we were probably the first to really go into the fancy food business and have a party store. So after
that,
we
were
copying. Well, I built it in 49, and I worked for my folks for 20 years in that store. And of course, my dad passed away. My mother made me a partner in the business, and so my mother and I were partners in the business up until the time she passed away. And then, of course, I had a sister in New York, and I had worked in that store for 20 years. And frankly, in all that time that I worked in that store, I had never had a problem being held up or anything like this. And as it got to be more and more and more, these stores, and these liquor stores, were the ones that were being picked on and being held up. And I had a fear of being held up. And 80% of the robberies in Detroit, liquor stores. This is what they were after, liquor stores. And we weren't this far from Detroit. It was not that hard to come out. I was always afraid of being held up. And about this time, we moved to Heartland. And we wanted more land. We bought 10 acres out in Heartland. My daughter wanted a horse, and my son wanted horses. So we moved, and I was driving back and forth, and I found Jim Roth, who I just was a revelation in the business, because he had the same business principles I did, and kept the store going. And today, of course, you see what the Good Time Party Store is today.
Yes.
It is one of the top five stores in the state of Michigan as far as party stores are concerned.
But there will be those of us in Northville who will always think of it as the Altman Party Store, no matter what who happens to be running it today.
Yeah, well, one of the original license, that when they first started issuing liquor licenses, they issued 1,000 liquor licenses in the state of Michigan, and we had one of the originals. Our original license number was 918. And one of the first, and this, of course, was due to my friend. There were about 6 or 7 applications in Northville for this liquor license. Nobody would admit it because nobody wanted, but I'm sure a couple of the, I don't know if Lou Stewart and Mike Gunsville Mike Gunsel submitted an application for a liquor license or not. I don't know. I just know that my dad knew the guy on the Liquor Control Commission, and that's how we got it. I don't pull no bones about it. That's, you know. But the property is another story.
Now we're talking 6 acres.
You're
now
talking 6.5 acres.
So we put it in perspective. Tell us now, would that take in the Northville Record Building?
It would take in the Northville Record Building. It would take in the old Marathon gas station, which is now the Ford dealer's used car place.
Yeah.
It would take in the corner, which was the Belnor Drive-In, which would take in the Good Time Party Store, of course, all of McDonald Ford's.
All of them,
all
of
McDonald Ford's, yeah, on that side of the street. And of course, all the Good Time Party Store now, he owns the north side of the street. And then the Club gas station. My old homestead
was on that. Or Clark gas station.
Yeah, I think we sold that house to Don Weir.
Don Weir bought that house.
Yeah, I think we sold that house. So this was a very interesting thing.
Now you went right up to the park then, Nick.
Oh, hey, I want to tell you now, if you could envision this piece of property, it's just an orchard. Just a piece of property. The house was at the Clark gas station and the rest was a field. We cut a little lawn there. We had 12 rows of grapes, 100 feet long. And my dad used to have, we used to have a little fruit stand out there in the front, just for kicks,
yeah,
just because we had an orchard. And I'll tell you how smart my dad was when it came to be farming. He knew absolutely nothing about farming. We had pear trees, peach trees, cherry trees, and apple trees. So, you know, and all these beautiful trees there. So trees have to be trimmed. Well, you know what my dad would do? He would call up Ralph Foreman and say, "Ralph, I need some help. Could you, I got to get these trees trimmed." And I would presume he paid somebody. Foreman would send somebody down and trim the trees. My dad wouldn't trim those trees. Now, there was an old guy, and I wish I could think of his name, and I think I do remember his name. I think his name was Brown. Now, there were two little houses that were right past where the VFW Hall is now, and an old gentleman there by the name of Brown. I'm sure his name was Brown. I can remember he wore, I was fascinated because he wore a beard like Grover Cleveland, big mustache,
yeah,
and a beard. And Mr. Brown would come down and trim those grapes. Now, you know, not anybody, you just can't walk in and cut grapes. You got to know how to do this. And he would come down and do the grapes. That I remember Mr. Brown doing. And then when the fruit would come, we'd all go out and pick. My relatives would come out from Detroit, and we had a little fruit stand. We had a couple of bushel baskets and set a board on it.
I remember that.
And we'd sell apples and cherries and things like this. Well, anyway, there was this property. So Kenny Rathbun, at this point in time, needed some property to build a garage. And it was kind of a thing where you needed a big piece of property for a car dealership, and there just wasn't any property in around where Kenny Rathbun was. And I was not involved in the deal. My mother and my dad, I talked about Kenny Rathbun came down and wanted to buy some property. Now, I don't know how much he bought, but it's that building that the Northville Record Commission ended up. But that was the first piece of property of our 6.5 acres that was sold.
That would be the end of the property
that
going
would,
south.
That would put it very close to the city limits.
Correct.
Now, the next house, there were two houses past there. And one of them, the last one, was owned by people by the name of Palmer. And Lee Palmer and his mother. And Lee, unfortunately, had epileptic fits. and would and back in those days they couldn't control him, and when he would have a seizure, which is a better name
than yes. But that's what we called them.
That's what they called them. He would just lay right down any place. He would walk uptown, and it would happen halfway between uptown. Everybody knew it. They did everything they could to bring him back. They had a refreshment stand out in front of their house. I don't know how many people remember that.
Yeah.
But they'd sell ice cream and things like that. Now, we had a path from our house through the field up to that refreshment stand. And, of course, we would beg our folks, let's go see Mrs. Palmer and Lee. You know, now we didn't want to go see Mrs. Palmer and Lee, but we wanted to get up to the refreshment stand because we knew that if we got up to the refreshment stand, we would either get penny candy or an ice cream cone or something like that, right? And, of course, that piece of property went to what is north of Schooner Home now.
Yes.
And Allen Memorial is in there. So now we've got the piece of property sold to Kenny Rath. And my dad was still had this fair stock. Very loyal to the fair. But by now, it was Northville Downs Racing in there. The Northville Fair.
I hope you still have that stock.
Oh, no. We sold it, and I was really glad to sell it. And we sold it to Margaret Zadie.
Yes.
And, but anyway, about this time, the races were going on. And a lot of things were happening in Northville. And one of the things that was happening in Northville was a cutoff. They always called it 7 Mile Route Cutoff. For lack of a better name, this was a 7 Mile because of traffic going through town.
It ended at South Main.
7 Mile in South Main. And if you wanted to go out to the Mayberry Sanitarium, which was functioning, or anything, Foreman's Orchards out 7 Mile Route, you had to come down through town. So they had talked about the cutoff for years and years and years. So about this time, the engineering studies, I believe, were getting done. The county contacted my folks about selling the right-of-way down through there, and everything was in a talking stage. Now enter Northville Downs, who needed more space for barns. Now, you've got to understand that Northville Downs is surrounded by park property, Wayne County Park property. Now, where the present barns are now, where the creek is, of course, was all Wayne County Park property. And Northville Downs wanted to expand their barns. And so they approached Wayne County on buying this swamp. And Wayne County can't sell county park property. This was Edward Hines Park property. And can you imagine what would happen if the county had said to the racetrack, sure, we'll sell you this piece of property, and the people would have been up in arms. So they couldn't sell it. Well, now, at this point in time, I don't know who put the deal together. I would presume Dr. Snow was involved.
Probably.
I would think that Dr. Snow was very much involved in this. I'm not sure that Orlo Owen was not involved in this thing. I really don't know all the people from the racetrack who were involved, but somebody got the bright idea of coming to my folks and saying to my folks, let's trade the county your right-of-way through your 6.5 acres for the swamp. So here again, this was between my folks and our attorney, who at this time was Dunbar Davis, who ended up as a municipal judge, and my mother and Judge Davis, Davis's mother, were very dear friends. And Mrs. Davis says to my mother, my son has just got his license to practice. You know, if you need an attorney sometime.
Here he is.
And consequently, my folks went to see him. And I think they were one of his first clients back. And then when the racetrack deal came up, of course, Dunbar, being the family attorney, took care of our end of it. So my dad, in effect, what really happened was my dad traded the right-of-way for the 7-mile road to go through our 6.5 acres